Episode 4, Bianca Luna, Associate Pastor of Children's and Youth Ministry, interviews Urban Grace Congregant, Dr. John Wu.
Welcome, friends, to another episode of The Last Stop. Today, I get to interview John Wu, who is a congregant at Urban Grace Church. Thanks for coming and doing this with us, John.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So, question number one, tell us a bit about who you are. Give us a glimpse into what identities you hold that have a deep significance into your personhood.
Well, I was actually born in a different country. I was born in Malaysia. But I've been in the United States for almost 54 years. So it's been a long time. And as you can imagine, I'm very much assimilated into American culture. In addition to that, I was also a person who had English as a first language at the time that I came. So unlike many other immigrants who struggled with learning a new language, that was not an issue for me. And so as a result, I was just able to enroll in high school here, and this was actually in Los Angeles back in the late 1960s. And then from that point on, I mean, during the first even few months I was here, it was a matter of picking up an American accent, which I didn't find too much difficulty in doing. As you know, growing up even elsewhere, you have to be impressed by how much Hollywood is exported all over the world, and if you're actually exposed to a lot of movies back then from Hollywood, and so you sort of know a lot of how the language is spoken and all that. And most people would not even know that I was an immigrant, you know, unless the topic actually came up. From there, I went to college, and then after that, I moved to New England, where I went to medical school, and then eventually I then went to the Portland area where I did my medical training, and Portland is where I have lived the longest, probably about 34 years. That's where I met my wife, that's where all my kids are born, and that's where all my kids went to school. And that's why, basically, I had my full-time career. It was in 2012 where my wife, Terry, was offered a job here in Tacoma at Pacific Lutheran University. And that's when she decided to move up here. I wasn't able to do it at the same time because our youngest was still in high school. So I stayed, the end of 2013, by that time, our youngest had left for college, and I was at the age of 60 where I could officially retire from my medical group, and that's when I moved up to Tacoma. So I've been in Tacoma for 9.5, almost 10 years now. And for me, having been in this country for so long, one thing that does seem to, I find myself being defined in some ways, is straddling both cultures. One is, you know, the United States, America, where I've been living most of my life. But I go back to my home country fairly frequently, and I still have a lot of friends that I basically grew up with in grade school. And when I get there, I find myself sort of automatically, unconsciously reverting to the way I was in many ways. I sometimes even start speaking with the old accent that I had back then, or the old kind of English, which is a kind of an odd combination of different languages from there incorporated into English. And I go back and forth. And then finally, you know, being a doctor is not just a job. It's probably not even more than just a career. It's almost like a calling. And so no matter where you go, whether you like it or not, that also helps define me whether I do it or somebody else does it for me, that, you know, it's there. So that's how I look at myself, that sort of a mixture of two cultures, a profession, and just being a somebody who's been here, lived here most of my life.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a good glimpse of who you are and both the cultures and your calling. And that's great. Thank you so much. And this is a great jump into question two. And when did you decide to check out Urban Grace, and how long have you been here?
This is actually a funny story that many people in the congregation have already heard. When I moved up here, it was January of 2014. For the previous 20-odd years, we had belonged to a community church in the Portland area. And as I said, my wife came up here about a year and a half ahead of me. When I came up, we all knew that we would eventually want to find a church home. But there was so much to explore in a new city that, you know, that just got pushed aside and pushed aside. We did check out, walk into a couple of churches, but they were not having services then. It was like, you know, too early in the morning or a weeknight or something like that, just looking at the buildings. Then finally, Easter Sunday 2014 came around, and we looked at each other and said, well, we have to go to some church. Well, it turns out during that time, we were living in a condo one block away from here. And we passed this church every day because that's how you drive when you come off the freeway. So we decided, well, we'll take the path of least resistance. We'll walk a block and go to church there for Easter service. We came in here and we never left. So we've been here 9.5 years.
So pretty much the whole duration of you being in Tacoma.
Right.
Nice. That's awesome. Well, glad you decided to stay. Question number three is, as a person of color, do you feel accepted here at Urban Grace?
Yes, and you know, that has never been an issue here. You know, from the first day we walked in, at that time, this was a much smaller congregation, so pretty much everybody knew everybody, and we were obviously the strangers in the room that morning, and lots of people just came up to us and introduced themselves and welcomed us. And that wasn't just, you know, the perfunctory things that you do to a stranger, but, you know, that has continued ever since. And we got more involved. You know, we started volunteering at the community breakfast and other things. You know, I used to be one of the team members that counted the offerings in the days when a lot of it was still done by cash and check before the pandemic. You know, in about a year, I actually became a council member, and then my wife was also very much involved in those days in the children's ministry because it was all done by volunteers, and if there weren't enough volunteers, it just wasn't going to fly. So it's been a very, you know, a very smooth transition, and we've never sort of had any issues come up that we were not, you know, that we were people of color, because my wife is also white, so that does is a little unique situation as well.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah, I didn't realize Terry helped in children's ministry. I should ask her if she's interested again. Question number four is, how would you personally define post-colonialism? In your world context, what are some examples you've seen played out?
Well, if you listen to Liliana's podcast about it, she talked a lot about how the church needs to conceptually change the way they look at how we define Christianity and how we define a Christian in the post-colonial era, where we're trying to shed the aura of a Eurocentric approach to pretty much everything. And I think that's, you know, a difficult transition for everybody because we're, you know, that concept is so deeply ingrained in everybody. But you can also see it play out in other aspects of what's going on in this world today. Foreign affairs, politics, for example. I think part of the divisiveness of what's going on in this, in the politics of this country, is that politicians are playing on the discomforts of a lot of folks about the whole idea of a non-Eurocentric world, or defining the world in a non-Eurocentric way. And people like to hang on to their comfort zone and stay there. And unfortunately, some of our political leaders have decided to latch on to that discomfort as their way of maintaining their grip on power and influence. In the world, we can see this actually playing out very much so in what's in the news nowadays, and that's the whole idea of a world where the United States and Western Europe are no longer the dominant political, cultural, and military powers, especially the United States. I mean, many, many observers consider the United States to be, in many ways, kind of an imperial nation because, you know, we have the most powerful military. We have, you know, bases spread all over the world, and we're looked upon for a lot of leadership. We're now being challenged by the BRICS nations, especially Russia and China. And so we immediately start thinking about how can we then protect our former position of being the only game in the world. And I don't think that is going to be a very fruitful approach, because all it would get us, I think, is this endless conflict and confrontation. What we need to start thinking in terms of is a multipolar world where there are many others that are they are powerful too, but we can actually all coexist together, though not necessarily the best of friends, but still in a way that we understand each other's needs and we know where they're coming from, and not get into any kind of conflicts. The competition is not a problem, because when we compete, it actually benefits everybody in the world with better products, better services, more wealth being created, which is good for everybody.
Yes, thank you so much. On question five, it says here, on the last episode, Liliana talks about post-colonial thinking and states, at Urban Grace, our goal is to decolonize the church and the interpretation of scriptures. Would you agree with that statement? And if so, can you think of a particular sermon or just in general how we do this?
I think this is going to require kind of a slow and gradual transition, because it is very uncomfortable. And what we always have learned is that to sort of wrestle people out of their comfort zones very quickly generally invites resistance, close-mindedness, and a desire to go back into the comfort zone, which I don't think in the long run will result in that much progress, but rather sort of listen to what people's discomforts and anxieties are about, and sort of learn to show them perhaps a better way of looking at things. And I think that would be better in terms of kind of slowly moving people to a time when they can think of the scriptures, put their worldviews in ways that are not locked into the old colonial thinking. I think an example that I can tell you about is something that sort of permeates us every year, which is the whole idea of a white Christmas, right? You know, come December, you know, week before Christmas, maybe there's a storm coming, and immediately what pops up among all the TV station meteorologists? Well, are we going to have a white Christmas? And you say, well, yes, maybe no, blah, blah, blah. Well, think about it. You know, Jesus was born in the Middle East. There is no snow there except at the very tops of some of the mountains. He was later in Northern Europe, in fact. It's the only place where this whole idea became sort of a valued concept, I guess, to have a quiet Christmas where everything's covered with snow. You know, I mean, think about it. The vast majority of Christians in the world don't live in that climate.
Right.
Yet, you know, you go to a place like Malaysia, you look at the Christmas cards, and that's what they have. They have pictures of a white Christmas, which is about as foreign a concept as you can imagine, right? So that tells you where how much it's permeated all thinking.
Yeah, that's right? A great example. On question number 6 is also in the last episode, Liliana says that the way to move forward with decolonization is to dismantle the assumption of the modern Western church that all Christians should think and behave in a certain uniformed way. This means to abandon our white supremacy way of thinking. Now, I would say I know many white folks that would agree with that, but it's a lot easier said than done. Old habits die hard, as you've already mentioned earlier. And when something is so ingrained in you for so long as the right way, it's really hard for someone to see someone doing something different and also call that the right way. So my question here for you is, if someone were to come to you being very genuine and open and asking, how should they not push their white culture, values, and ways of thinking onto others? What kind of encouragement or wisdom or advice would you give them?
Well, I'm going to have to just say a few things about actually what I believe in. And you have to interpret in the context that I have to openly admit I am a product of colonialism.
Yeah.
For the first 4 years of my life, I was technically a subject of Queen Elizabeth. Then Malaysia became independent, and I became the subject of another monarch. Now, I was then educated in English school. Our textbooks, several of them, initially at least, were imported from the UK. And, you know, many of us sort of became what is termed there as kind of like an Anglophile. You probably have heard of that term. And I have to catch myself every now and then to avoid thinking along the lines like that as well. So it's also difficult for me. The other thing I need to say, and I know a lot of people would disagree and may feel offended, is that basically I think racism is an inherent human trait. It is not unique to any ethnic group or groups. It's just there, and it just depends on what situation you are in that may or may not make it surface and be translated into actions. And I don't think we can get rid of that. And in fact, I will say that if you think you can get rid of that, you're fooling yourself. All we can really do is to be educated enough that it doesn't show up in your actions. But that even has its limitations, because the way we are hardwired, if you come into a situation of stress and crisis, all that training may be completely bypassed by your brain's inherent need to use shortcuts for what is perceived to be self-preservation. That's why you see, I think, some of the tragedies that go around, that you've seen around the country with police shootings, et cetera, et cetera. Even though many of them have been trained to act differently, it all sometimes goes out the window in a crisis situation. So for somebody who says, I want to really sort of start anew and act in and believe in a post-colonial world, first and foremost, at that time, you need to be honest with yourself that you probably feel comfortable in the old world, and that it will be an uncomfortable journey to get out of it, and it is a journey that you will never reach the goal, because to do that would be to be totally contrary to human nature. You can only get close. And it's really important to get as close as you can, knowing that it's about the journey, it's about the milestones. You're never going to get to the destination.
Yeah, that's good to just constantly be learning and educating yourself. And yeah, I think that's a great point. I think if you ever feel like you've arrived, then you probably have missed it completely.
Right, right.
So, yeah. Before we wrap up here, do you have any other final thoughts or concerns or comments or anything you'd like to share with us?
Not really. All I can say is that, you know, my 9 years with this church has been really, for me, spiritually a real gift and a blessing. I think it's the church has supported me during the times that I've gone abroad to do some medical volunteer work, and it's always sort of something that I think about when I was over there, thinking, well, there are people back here who are all kind of cheering me on and praying for me. So it's just been a wonderful, you know, a place that I've found. We're still going through some turmoil, but I think ultimately, I think we will come out of it at the other end, doing quite well. I hope to be here for quite a few more years.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much, John. Appreciate this time together and hearing your thoughts on this topic. Thanks, friends, for listening. I hope you learned more about John and his journey and our church as a church family. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next time.